number five, please. United States versus Donald Moore.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is David Ballard, and I represent the defendant appellant, Donald Moore, pursuant to the Criminal Justice Act. The indictment and conviction of Donald Moore in this case is based on an illegal seizure that, in violation of the Fourth Amendment. That seizure begins when Officer Welsh sees Donald Moore at the train station, and he makes an opinion that Donald Moore appears odd and is walking fast.
He doesn't see Donald Moore at the train station. He observes him, but does Donald Moore even know the officer exists at that point?
Well, he doesn't, but Officer Welsh continues based on that hunch.
Well, so he spots him, if you will. He identifies him, but where's the law that says that's a seizure?
Well, that is not the seizure itself. That is
not
the beginning of the investigation, but later on, when the taxi cab is pulled over, there's no reasonable suspicion to Moore that could possibly be based on an opinion that he appeared odd.
Well, except here's your problem, and I'm sure you know this perfectly well. When you add together the Supreme Court's decision in Wren, which allows the officers to pull over the cab for the failure to signal offenses, and this court's en banc decision in Childs, and you put on top of that the fact that the initial verbal exchanges between Mr. Moore and the officers were consensual, it's very hard for me to see how you can wind up with a conclusion that this evidence had to be suppressed.
Well, Your Honor, you have to look very closely at the facts in this case, which are unique and unlike Childs, where Childs you have the defendant was being seized within the scope of the traffic violation. He was suspected as to a cracked windshield and a seatbelt violation.
But of course, the rationale of Childs goes out of its way to say that the scope of the violation had nothing to do with the conversation between the officers, that talking isn't seizing.
In Childs, the court looks specifically at whether questioning itself, whether a question can be a seizure.
Right.
Here you have more than a question. The scope of the seizure when the taxi cab is pulled over is to investigate cab driver for failing to use his turn signal. Officer Welsh does not approach a cab driver at any point or make any sort of initial seizure to investigate that scope. He ignores that, goes directly outside of the scope to Donald Moore, who is not suspected in any criminal behavior, let alone...
But there's no prohibition against talking to the passengers.
No, but there is a prohibition against seizing Donald Moore outside of the scope of the purpose of the stop.
Where does that come from, though? I think that's just what Judge Kane is...
Where does it come from, right?
The rule that I stated comes from Florida, the lawyer, where the court says that the officers have to use the least intrusive investigative means to dispel any reasonable suspicions that a crime has occurred.
But they did. They said, can we talk to you? And he said, okay.
But the seizure occurs as soon as Officer Welsh approaches Donald Moore, and he opens the door, and he's now sees Donald Moore, not with any intention of investigating any purpose of the stop, not for investigating any criminal behavior. Unlike the typical case where you have a broadening, there's no broadening here. At no point is there any reasonable suspicion.
I think you'd have to argue that taxi cabs are somehow different, because it seems to me that on this record, the initial encounter between the officer and Mr. Moore fits in that first category that we've identified. If the officer can walk up to somebody on the street or talk to somebody in a taxi cab or otherwise, officers don't have to have reasonable suspicion to say, you know, good morning, Mr. Ballard, or anything. They can talk to people.
Well, certainly they can, but
they're not excused at that time when they talk to him, is what you say.
Well, but if the seizure has to be reasonable, if there's an unreasonable seizure preceding the consent, or
right,
supported consent, then you have to look at, was that consent tainted up the Fourth Amendment violation. And going back to your question, you said that the unique circumstances of a taxi cab, I think you would be hard-pressed to find circumstances where there is such further removed connection between the circumstances justifying the stop in the first place and the passenger who has no reasonable, there's no reasonable suspicion to him. There's no connection there, and Officer Welsh decides he's going to seize more, and because there is no connection, that seizure is an unreasonable seizure in violation of the Fourth Amendment. Then you have to...
it's the difference between being seated in the vehicle and standing on the outside of it.
Well, I think that's overgeneralized. I think that...
Well, in this case, he gained reasonable suspicion when he made the radio call and found out they had lied to him.
Well, two things as to the purported lying is that, first of all, the first consent, the purported consent that she had consented to talking with the officers, I submit that that was tainted by the search. Just the mere approach and the manner of investigating more was outside of the scope and therefore violative. Secondly,
what was outside the scope?
Officer Welsh.
How?
How is that? Because there was no, Officer Welsh made no attempt to investigate any of the circumstances justifying the fact.
He can't walk up to talk to him and discuss it?
Well, he can't seize more. He can walk up,
but he can walk up to him and talk to him. We seem to disagree when the seizure happened.
Well, the seizure occurred when Officer Welsh has approached Moore outside of the scope. That's when the seizure occurs. Then you have occurring after that is any purported consent.
If we made a rule on this, and if the stop was made because of a failure to properly signal, then the officer would, in your view, would not be able to talk to the passenger of the vehicle about anything.
Not unless there's a broadening to that passenger.
But don't we have cases which belie that sort of rule?
Well, I think you're getting a child is the case where there was purport, there was consent, and then subsequently that led to producing evidence.
Well, what about even Florida against Bostick, where the bus is legitimately stopped, and I think we would have to say the taxi cab is legitimately stopped here because of signal violations. Wren says it doesn't matter why the police officer stopped it. It's legitimately stopped. And the Supreme Court says in Bostick that the officers can question the people on the public bus, and it seems to me they're a lot like somebody who's riding in a cab, aren't they?
Well, the difference between Bostick in this case is in Bostick, it's a scheduled stop, so there's no invocation of the Fourth Amendment violation.
Right, but all I'm saying is once you've got the vehicle legitimately stopped, why can't the police talk to people who are riding in it? I realize why it's legitimately stopped is different in the two cases, but why does that difference matter?
Well, I think the difference is that in Florida v. Bostick, the court wanted to see whether there was an unreasonable seizure when the officers approached the defendant, and they determined that because there was the circumstances of that case showed it was voluntary, it was a scheduled stop. Because of that, there was no seizure, there was no Fourth Amendment issue at all.
Right.
Here you have a Fourth Amendment issue because Donald Moore is being investigated, and he sees, like I said a few times, once he gets up to that door and he starts questioning him. After that, you have to see if the consent is purged. As to both purported consents here, there's very little time. There's no intervening event because the only intervening event as to the subsequent purported consent is the actual questioning that was made possible by the Fourth Amendment violation. And the nature of the officer's conduct here is telling because the officers used this Fourth Amendment violation to get any purported consent. So under the Brown factors, I would submit that consent was still tainted. I'd like to reserve any time for rebuttal.
All right, counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Timothy Bass on behalf of the United States. Says what I think your point is dispositive for purposes of this appeal. But even prior to that point, it's not necessary to engage in what is permissible or impermissible conduct with respect to a passenger, even though I would submit the law on that is pretty well settled. Because in this case, that issue is waived. The defendant, if you look at his motion to suppress, if you look at his arguments before the magistrate judge and in his objections to the magistrate judge's recommendations, and most importantly, the defendant's own testimony, he consensually engaged in a conversation with the officer, Officer Welsh, who walked up to the passenger door, identified himself, and asked the defendant if he could speak with him, to which the defendant responded yes. Now, if that is not an example of a consensual encounter, it would be difficult to conceive of what would be. Not to mention that the defendant himself, again, testified to that fact, and the defendant never raised a challenge to that in his objections to the magistrate judge's report. So that issue is waived. Even if it's not waived, Your Honor, it is a highly novel argument, at the very least, to suggest that an officer merely walking up to someone is somehow a violation of the Constitution. We know from many cases from the Supreme Court and this court, most recently in Child, that the Fourth Amendment deals with searches and seizures. The defendant was not seized beyond the traffic stop, which again was not contested, was based on probable cause. He was not seized beyond that, because again he agreed to speak with the officers.
I suppose the most you could say is when the officer slides the door open on the cab, sort of a van-style cab, I take it, there's the officer standing in the doorway, and the defendant functionally can't really avoid the officer, right, at that point. He can't walk away the way you might be able to in the middle of an airport or on the street. Do you think that kind of limited lack of freedom to leave is enough to make a difference?
Well, Your Honor, I think this court addressed that. If you pare it down to that, I guess, a matter of second or two prior to the time the officer gets the words out of his mouth, can I talk to you? I think that goes back to Child, which is if the stop is based on probable cause, a momentary extension of the stop, and again, we know from the cases, and I didn't cite these in my brief because the issue of reasonable suspicion as to question of the passenger was not before the district court, but we know from established law that an officer can ask the passenger his identification or his name, can ask the driver and the passenger their travel plans and things of that sort. We know from the Supreme Court case, I believe it's Maryland versus Wilson or Doyle, that the officer can order a passenger out of the car. So none of that type of encountering with the passenger was displayed here. It was simply a question, can I talk to you? Yes, followed by some more questions resulting in a request for a consent to search. And that is the issue before the court. The only issue before the court is whether the district court clearly erred in crediting Officer Welsh's testimony that the defendant consented to a search of his clothing as opposed to a pat-down search. Judge Cudmore credited Officer Welsh's testimony. Judge Mills, in reviewing that, adopted that recommendation. And this court has said on many occasions that it will only reverse such a finding if it is completely without foundation, or if the district court credited exceedingly improbable testimony.
Now, on that point, I mean, I agree with you that if you got that far in terms of your argument, you're finished. I am not comfortable either about what Officer Welsh said or about what the district court said with respect to this so-called plain feel, in that Officer Welsh, if you look at the actual words he used, said, I believed it was such and such. But it seems to me there are a lot of things that could be hard that you might have in your pocket. Some people have, you know, palm organizers. Some people have, you know, all kinds of things. And it seems to me to know that something is hard inside a pocket or even that it's in plastic is a long way from knowing that what you're dealing with is an illegal controlled substance. So I'm not convinced that this playing field alternative is soundly based.
Your Honor, I would concede that there is that issue, and frankly, that was the same issue that I was concerned about. But I think if you look at the Supreme Court's case in Dickerson, and what it talked about there was whether or not the officer's playing field exceeded or further invaded a person's privacy interest beyond a pat-down search for weapons.
That part I agree with you, but the part that concerns me is they also have language that you've got to be awfully sure what it is you're feeling. And so, for instance, if it was his lower pocket and the officer had felt something that he knew had the shape of a pistol, then the officer knows what he's feeling. It's a very distinctive shape. So he has tactily discovered something, but just a hard thing in your pocket, it isn't terribly distinctive.
I agree, Your Honor, but that is the standard under which the Supreme Court has told us to evaluate plain feel. And the only point I would make there is that I believe Detective Welsh did testify in somewhat more detail, if you look at his testimony during the suppression hearing, based on his experience and the fact that he had felt this type of object before, but it was a little bit more unequivocal than simply his testimony that he believed. I believe he testified that based on his experience and knowledge and having felt that before, that he found that to be crack cocaine. And the district court credited that testimony. And this court was faced with the same issue previously, dealing with whether or not the district court erred in crediting testimony by the officer that it was immediately apparent to him that it was crack cocaine. And this court's response to that was, the district court is in the best position to evaluate that finding. I agree with you, Your Honor, that it is a fine line. But Judge Cudmore evaluated that testimony and made that finding, and I would submit that that finding was not clearly erroneous.
When he asked to search, it was, how did he ask for consent to the search, which was given?
Your Honor, there was admittedly some discrepancy in that, but it was Detective Welch ultimately testified, and all that happened here was he initially testified in the grand jury and referenced the word pat-down, but he went beyond that and clarified that testimony in the grand jury to say that he asked the defendant for consent to search his clothing. He further testified to that during the suppression hearing, in which he said, I asked the defendant, can I search you? And that he did not limit his request for consent to anything other than being able to reach inside his clothing. And
but he did say his testimony was not just can I search you, but can I search your clothes?
Yes, Your Honor, and what
did he see? You said yes. What did he see?
Well, Your Honor, I believe in the suppression hearing he testified, can I search your clothing or can I search you? I think he used both those phrases. But all that
both of them.
Yes. But all that is necessary for validating the search is that he requested consent to search his clothing, which is corroborated by what was in his police report. And what he said in his police report was, can I search your clothing? And the crack cocaine was found inside of his clothing. So for those reasons, Your Honor, the government would ask that the judgment of the district court be affirmed. Thank you.
All right.
How much?
1 minute.
1 minute. To address the facts of this case, that's what was asked.
Take a short
meeting. There's only one question asked. Officer Welsh, in his testimony, says that I asked him one question, and that was, can I search you? He was unsure as to whether he said that. Then he had his recollection refreshed. He said, I asked for a pat-down. Then later on rebuttal, he says, wait, I asked for a search. And then in the record, there's nowhere where he says, can I get a full search of your clothing?
He said a full search of your clothing.
Well,
can I search your clothing, or can I search?
Well, he's inconsistent. We don't know. He says pat down and search. He doesn't say search to your clothing. He doesn't say can I search inside your clothing. Donald Moore specifically says whatever purported consent I gave was for officer safety. It was certainly not understood to be meaningful consent that it was going to be inside his clothing. And for because it's, you know, request for verbal. Thank you.
Finish your sentence.
Because there was a Fourth Amendment violation, because the consent was tainted here, and because there was a excessive Terry frisk, the defendant respectfully requests that the district court's order denying the motion to suppress be reversed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Court will take this case under advisement and take a short recess and return shortly.